Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 8, entitled Necessary Evil. This episode aired November 14th, 1993.
We're nearly a third of the way through the season.
Yeah, we are. Almost didn't make it after the last one.
Yeah, that wasn't a great one.
We've moved from the crappy road to a much better road this week, so this is good.
Yeah.
So anything you want to talk about from that previous horrible episode?
No, it was perfect.
Not the podcast. The podcast was great, but the episode was horrible.
The episode is probably one of the worst ever.
It really fueled my dislike of Ferengi.
Does that count as xenophobia?
No, I just don't like Ferengi men.
Okay.
So let's just move on.
Okay.
In the cold open, Quark is on Bajor talking to a Bajoran woman with very tall hair and an impressive earring that's like a model of the solar system.
That's an expensive earring right there.
Definitely. The two are being weirdly flirty, but really it's Quark and he plays every scene with a female with a smarmy slant, so it's really hard to tell. A storm is raging outside, and inside the house it's extremely dark. I'm not sure why. The woman is flattering Quark, saying he was always so kind, so she obviously wants something from him and knows how to get it.
Yeah.
He's playing up his own part by saying he ran a black market. He never really thought of himself as kind. This woman and her husband lived on the station during the occupation. She says, "I didn't kill him, you know. A lot of people believed it was me. That shapeshifter thought so." Quark brushes it off, saying it was a long time ago. "Say what you will about the Cardassians, at least they could keep the power on," she says. I thought she was talking about the station, because you know how the power goes out all the time?
Yeah.
But I figured out later that she had no power in her house, and it was actually dark there because there were no lights.
So they threw Mullabok off his farm and all the people off that moon to generate power, and they can't keep the lights on.
But there's a storm, so a pole went down.
Someone crashed into their pole.
Yeah, very South Dakotan. She offers Quark 5 bars of latinum to retrieve a strong box her husband kept in the wall of his shop on the station. Quark figures she doesn't want to get it herself and come in contact with Odo. He asks what's in it, but she says it's of no value other than the sentimental. He says it will take him a day or two. Then he makes a smarmy exit, kind of looking her up and down. So gross. After he leaves, her smile fades quickly, and a dude comes out from the shadows. He doesn't say anything. We just know it's not good. And then we go into the theme song.
So we know it's going to be something very valuable that's in that box.
Yeah, because why would you try to make a deal with a Ferengi?
Yes.
On the station, Odo is recording a security log, Stardate 47282.5. He says, at Sisko's request, he's begun recording a daily log of law enforcement affairs. He can't comprehend the human compulsion for keeping records, lists, and files. So many, in fact, that they have to invent new ways to store them microscopically. Otherwise, their records would overrun all known civilization. It's a little dramatic, but yes. It's very Odo.
I assume that points to Odo being able to remember things really, really well. He's already demonstrated he has a very good memory for things.
Well, he does say that at one point, but keeping record of something doesn't have anything to do with whether or not Odo can remember it.
But he really doesn't see the need for it.
Yeah, because he can remember everything. I think he says that in one of these logs. We drop into Odo's office as he's turning out the lights for the night. He wraps up his log by saying, "Everything is under control," which I think is a bit of a dig at the whole thing. Like, everything's fine. This episode already has a different feel. There's the Odo voiceover, the weirdly dark house in the earlier scene, and now the station is dark. We're definitely in for something a little different.
Right.
We go out to the promenade, and it's dark, and Quark and Rom are lurking in the shadows on their way to break into the former chemist's shop. Quark learns that Rom knows how to get through the special lock on the door because he has done it with one on Quark's storeroom door many times. Quark calls him a thief, and they bicker in the doorway after Rom opens the door. There's always a cross between comic relief and treacherousness with the Ferengi.
Yeah.
But this is a little dumb. I mean, you're committing a crime. Don't stand in the doorway arguing. Get moving.
And they did seem to be making a lot of noise while committing the crime.
Yeah, exactly.
There's also something else going on here. We're starting to see the development of the Rom character, that he isn't really as stupid as he's been made out to be. There's a practical side to him that I think we've seen for the first time, or it's been spelled out for the first time. We already know he made those security rods that Quark uses to override things. So I think this is starting to spell out that Rom is actually pretty practical.
Well, I think up until now, we've mostly seen Rom through Quark's eyes.
Yeah.
And in this scene, he learns a lot about Rom, and so do we.
Right.
We learn about that lock, but we learn a little bit more, because once they're inside, they find the panel to open, and Quark is going to burn it off. But Rom brought along some magnesite drops that will eat through duranium. Just one drop on each corner, and the panel will fall off. Then there's a whole thing about Rom having to get into Quark's floor safe when he was in the Gamma Quadrant recently, and they fight about that.
But anyway,
Rom opens the panel really easily, and the strong box is revealed. And so we've learned a lot about Rom at this point, that he apparently he's up to a lot of shenanigans because, like you said, he's practical. He had to solve problems when Quark was gone.
Another thing that reinforces Quark's lack of Ferenginess, he's blissfully unaware that Rom is doing all these things.
Yeah, like, didn't he think about how did Rom get money into the safe when I was in the Gamma Quadrant? It's like, he didn't even think about
how did Rom get stock out of the storeroom to give to customers?
Didn't think about it. He's kind of a dope. I did think there was a lot of extraneous nonsense in the scene. They actually could have just skipped this entire scene and just had the box.
Yeah.
Next, we're in Quark's, and Quark is using a laser to break into the box, of course.
Naturally.
Inside, he finds a piece of paper with a list of 8 Bajoran names. Quark says he wants a picture of this before he reseals the box, and he sends Rom to get, and I quote, an imager.
Doesn't anybody have a phone?
After Rom shuffles off, the man from the shadows in the cold open emerges from the shadows here and comes up behind Quark. He points a phaser at him and says, "She knew you couldn't resist opening it." He takes the paper, says, "I'm sorry," and then shoots Quark at point-blank range. Quark goes flying backwards all the way across the bar. The shooter takes off before Rom comes shuffling out to find Quark on the floor. Quark appears to be dead on the floor as his eyes are wide open, and Rom starts shouting that his brother has been killed. And then we go to an ad break.
Yeah, I remember this because I could hear you cheering in the other room when you were watching it.
I thought, oh, we've got off to a great start. Let's get rid of some Ferengi. This is good. We come back from the ad break and Bashir is working on Quark and shouting for 10 cc's of Cordelin and an anti-grav lift stat. This place reminds me of a bar in a Wild West movie. Anyone can come in anytime and Quark is always getting attacked and the doctor's always rushing in to save him. But wasn't that what Bashir wanted, frontier medicine in episode 1? Because now he's got it.
Yeah, it does show that Bashir is pretty good if he also knows Ferengi anatomy well enough that he can actually attend to Quark.
Well, he's had to treat Quark a few times, hasn't he? So,
well, only for like skin conditions, like when he got branded.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, he was also there when he almost blew up. And then another time he hit his head. He's been in there a few times. Maybe he did some extra research before he came to the station.
Yeah.
He knew there'd be Ferengi involved.
Yeah, that would be a smart thing for him to do.
Yeah. Also, this thing about it being the Wild West, when we were watching the Star Trek Day panel, didn't they talk about this being like Gunsmoke?
Yes, which was actually kind of funny because culturally that has no reference point for me.
That is funny. Especially, yeah, you never watched it, never cared, and you're the one who liked this show. Although Gunsmoke is certainly a show I would never have watched, and it's so before my time, I guess.
Yeah, I only know about it through living in the States. I had no idea what Gunsmoke was coming from the UK.
I remember it used to come on as reruns on television.
Yeah.
I remember my dad loved it, but that is not a show for me.
Well, it was really aimed at his generation.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, Sisko comes in and he's not exactly rushing. He's thinking, just another annoying thing at this stupid bar. Bashir keeps yelling. Now he wants to know what kind of weapon was used. Odo says since it got by the weapon detectors, his best guess is a compressed Tetrion beam weapon.
So why doesn't everybody use compressed Tetrion beam weapons?
Exactly. It's the point of the scanner.
Yeah.
Then Kira comes in, and now they're all standing over Bashir and another dude working on Quark. Bashir says he has a thoracic cavity rupture and extensive neural trauma, which all seems bad. Also, what's bad in this scene is Bashir's hair. It's super frizzy. It's terrible.
Well, he just got out of bed to come and attend Quark.
Maybe. They continue to try and revive Quark. Odo tells Sisko that Rom says it was a robbery. Sisko asks if anything was taken, and Rom says he doesn't know, but Odo says he knows. Kira says security is stopping everyone at the airlocks, but it took 5 minutes to get into position, and the assailant may have already been on a ship. Sisko says to delay outgoing vessels as long as possible and advise all the ship's security details. Then they get Quark onto the anti-grav stretcher, and Bashir says we have to get him to surgery. Quark's eyes are wide open the entire time of this, by the way, which is really disturbing. I don't know why they did that.
I think that's to show how alien the Ferengi are.
I guess. Rom is distressed, and he wonders what he'll do if his brother dies. Odo says, oh, you'll have a lot to do once this place is yours. Wives serve, brothers inherit. Rule 139, if I'm not mistaken. Then it dawns on Rom that it's true, and he smiles, saying, I hadn't thought of that. Oh, really? Odo asks, because it's a solid motive for murder. Rom is so dumb. Rom starts denying that he was responsible, and Odo says he's had his eye on him for a long time. You're not as stupid as you look. I am too, Rom insists. By the way, Rom tried to kill Quark back in episode 10 of season 1.
Yes.
We didn't do anything about that then. Why do we care now?
Yeah, it's just the Ferengi way.
This is where that miracle of episodic TV comes into play. Like, nothing else happened before this episode.
Yes.
It's a clean slate every time.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, he says he would never hurt his own brother.
Unless he was going to put him out of an airlock.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Sisko interrupts, defending him, but Odo tells him to stay out of it, which seemed a little terse,
yes,
but turns out to be a good cop, bad cop ploy.
Yes.
Odo points out that the Ferengi will sell their own flesh and blood for a Cardassian groat, whatever that is. Sisko says Rom is a family friend. His son is very close to my boy. Odo says then you'd better tell his son that dad's going to the lunar prison on Meldar 1, where it's 200 degrees. Did he just give a Fahrenheit temperature?
I'm afraid so.
Oh my god! Boom, I noticed something. Rom insists he didn't do it. He says, irony of ironies, I finally get the bar and I'm falsely accused of my brother's murder. Sisko puts his arm around Rom and leans in really closely. Rom, as a friend, if you know anything that might be helpful, I think you should tell us. Because Rom is really a bit dumb, he immediately gives in and says, the man who shot my brother stole a list. Sisko smiles as the good cop, bad cop thing has worked really easily.
Oh, yeah.
Rom tells him that someone on Bajor hired them to retrieve the box, and inside they found a list of 8 Bajoran names. He doesn't know who hired them or who hid the box, but it was hidden years ago when the Cardassians were still here and the ship's store was a chemist shop.
I thought this scene was very funny.
The good cop, bad cop?
Yes. Like you said, it seemed uncharacteristically rude of Odo, the way he talked to Sisko. And then it was like a few seconds later, I suddenly finally twigged it and went, oh,
yeah, it's a ploy.
Bad cop, it's a ploy.
And it worked so easily because Rom really is a dope.
Yeah, Sisko was great. I mean, that where he puts his arm around him and does the whole friendly thing, you know.
Yes.
He's a family friend. It was an amusing take on sort of a classic police procedural trope.
Yeah, it was good. Then Rom walks Odo to the shop, and Odo is quite shocked when he recognizes the door they're at. Odo types in the security code and the door opens. And then the point of view shifts from behind Odo to in front of him, sort of through the door, and we jump back in time to when the Cardassians ruled the station.
Flashback.
Yes.
I thought he rather openly typed in that code right in front of Rom.
I thought so too, and especially when we consider how easily Rom seems to pick up getting into places. Now he knows the code.
Exactly.
But also maybe they have rotating codes.
Oh.
Although really, there's no evidence of that sort of smart security going on the station. They should have rotating codes.
I'm just surprised they actually locked the door on that station.
Oh my god, yeah. Odo's clothes have changed, and everything goes a bit darker, and we see armed Cardassians on the promenade behind him. Inside the shop is Gul Dukat with his feet up having a drink. He had asked to see Odo. And he tells him, we met before at a reception at the Bajoran Center for Science 2 years ago. Ah yes, Odo says, when the Cardassian High Command was invited to view me, in double quotes. You were very amusing that night, Dukat says. You did a Cardassian neck trick that brought the house down. Odo says the Bajoran scientist who worked with me thought you might find it entertaining, and he made me practice for weeks. He does not look happy about the story at all.
No.
This is obviously to emphasize that Odo was often put on display like a party trick, and the Cardassians enjoyed it.
Well, he talked about that earlier. He was the life of the party used as entertainment.
Right. Even though others wanted to send Odo out to entertain the troops, Dukat thought maybe he could provide a more valuable service to the Cardassian Empire. He asks Odo if he's ever seen a dead man, and Odo says, yes, in your minds. Oh, those are casualties, Dukat says. Then he walks over to the other side of the room and pulls back a sheet that's over a body, and he says, this is a murder, and I've decided you're going to investigate it. He thinks Odo will make a good investigator, but Odo doesn't want to be a Cardassian agent. Not an agent, Dukat says, an investigator. We can't have these Bajorans running around murdering each other now, can we?
Whereas Cardassians murdering Bajorans, that's just fine. They're just casualties.
Yeah, it's totally different. I'm talking about order, justice. Odo points out that there's no justice in the Cardassian occupation of Bajor, but Dukat does not take that well. Don't push me, he says. Dukat pauses dramatically and then says his superiors would solve this murder by rounding up 10 Bajorans at random and executing them. He wants Odo to give him a better alternative.
It's interesting that he knows Odo cares enough about the Bajorans not to allow this sort of random execution to happen and the Cardassians to carry out their version of justice. So
right.
Dukat clearly seems to have done his homework on Odo before he tried to recruit him.
He says the Bajorans seem to trust Odo to sort out petty disputes, and Odo says he's considered a neutral observer. That's because you're not one of them, Dukat says, and for that you should be thankful. God, he's a jerk.
He really is.
So here's one more petty dispute, only this time I'm bringing it to you. Find the murderer. Odo sighs and asks if there are any witnesses. We go to another dark room on the station, and the Bajoran woman from earlier is sitting there staring blankly. Gul Dukat and Odo come in, and Dukat apologizes for keeping her waiting and calls her Mrs. Vatrick. He introduces Odo to her, saying Odo will be investigating her husband's death. Dukat says he's assigned this space to Odo, and they'll get him whatever he needs. This appears to be an early version of Odo's office.
I wonder if there's a bucket in there already.
Probably not. This whole station, it's so dark, and it's smoky, and it's ominously blue, like the lighting is all blue. It's like we're in a dark street in a movie set in a caricature of London in the 1800s. That's what I thought.
Yes.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it did kind of make me laugh the way everything was dark. Did the Cardassians, like, are they trying to save energy so they move all the light switches down to the lowest setting?
Well, how can it be foggy in a space station?
I assume because they used it as ore reprocessing and they didn't bother to filter out smoke or vapors.
So it's smoky. Well, I mean, they're really just trying to give it this film noir kind of feel.
It does work pretty well. There's a great ominous feel to what's going on there. It does feel oppressive.
It does. Dukat gives the woman his sympathies and leaves, saying good hunting to Odo on his way out the door. Odo asks the woman if she has any idea who may have done this, and she has a very good idea. Her husband was having an affair with some girl who showed up on the station a couple of weeks ago. He became infatuated with her. Why are men like that? Odo scoffs. He has no idea. Odo asks if she loved him, and she says of course, but it's a trap because he finds it curious that she hasn't shed a tear, even though he's been dead for 2 hours. He's observed that when a humanoid cries, the epidermis below their eyes swell noticeably, and he says, yours is perfectly normal. I'm too angry to cry, she says. I'm in shock. Yeah.
Good cover.
She figures that when her husband broke off the affair with the girl, she killed him in a jealous rage. She doesn't know her name, but she can point her out. So out we go into the Tarek Nor version of DS9, and it is not nice. It's blue and foggy. There's armed Cardassians everywhere, a giant metal security fence and gates. And there are people sitting on the ground eating, and the walls have, like, burlap material on them. It's all very Charles Dickens stage play.
London of the 1880s.
Totally. The woman tells Odo the last time she saw her husband alive was at dinner when he went back to the shop to do some inventory work. Inventory work is always a convenient story element in movies and TV shows.
I went back to check on the inventory. Oh, what's her name?
Yeah. Odo is surprised to learn they don't live in the normal community quarters, but they have a private room. She says they were lucky to have some privacy. And then she stops and points. There, that's her.
Big reveal.
And we see her pointing at Kira, of course, who's in a food line. And Kira has alarmingly long hair. And she's wearing very drab clothes like everyone else in this Dickens play.
It was during Kira's hippie phase.
Oh, yeah, that hair has got to go. Then we snap back to the present, and the light completely changes back to the fluorescent hues we're used to in Star Trek.
I wonder if it's that Cardassians prefer dimmer lighting.
Maybe. I was also wondering if that was maybe just Odo's memory of it.
Oh.
That it was a darker time, and he remembers it as being darker. I don't know.
That's a good point, given what the environment was like then.
Yeah.
But we do get some more insight into how long Odo's been doing this job. So this was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's been working as a
investigator or security. Well, he was an investigator. We don't know when he became the head of security.
Yeah. But it was good to get some timeline on this.
Yeah, and also we are there for Odo meeting Gul Dukat, Kira, Quark. It's interesting. It gives us some, background.
Although we haven't got to Quark yet.
I know. It's coming. In the present, or the future, I guess, Kira comes up to Odo saying they haven't picked up anyone at the airlocks. She heard about the list hidden in the wall, and she couldn't help wondering if it had something to do with Vatrick. Odo says he's been wondering the same thing. They look at each other for a moment, and then Kira leaves abruptly. Something weird going on there.
Yep.
After the ad break, Odo is giving another security log, and the film noir elements continue here with this voiceover. In this job, there is no unfinished business. This assault on Quark reopens a 5-year-old murder case that I've never, not for a moment, closed. Patience is a lost virtue to most, to me, an ally. I mean, come on. That's like so ridiculous.
I'm pretty sure they just lifted this from The Spirit.
Oh my gosh. He read that in a book somewhere. Remember when we talked about Odo being in a cozy murder show?
Yes.
This is it right here, the Odo mysteries.
Odo and Quark.
We could do this without Quark.
Quark has to be the comic relief.
Hopefully he's dead. We shot him. Ugh, we can get somebody else. Bashir could be the sidekick. He's ridiculous enough.
Yeah, that would actually work really well, wouldn't it? Oh, you know who'd work perfectly? Mullabok.
Hmm. Well, he'd be the crotchety old guy in the village.
Yeah.
Odo is questioning Rom in his office, trying to get him to concentrate on the list. He claims to not remember any names, but after closing his eyes and focusing, he comes up with the name Chezo, though he's not really confident in it. Rom has this big tooth at the front that, like, shoots up and then off to the right. It's very distracting. He should get that fixed. It must be very difficult to speak with that thing.
It's probably very attractive for Ferengis.
Weird. Apparently, Quark isn't dead yet. Rom wonders if they're keeping him alive by artificial means. My brother wouldn't want that, he says. Odo says no. He's clinging to life all on his own. Typical, Rom says.
Oh, I love the way Rom is ready to just turn off the machines. He seems very disappointed that Quark is managing to hang on.
Yeah, for sure. They come out of the security office and Odo tells him to call him day or night if he remembers anything. Then some little children run by laughing and playing. I assume they're trying to show the contrast of the old days and the new.
Yeah. Did you notice Odo also managed to get a little dig in on Rom there, where he said, clear your mind if there's anything there.
Yeah. He gets picked on for being dumb.
Yeah.
Rom leaves and Kira comes up asking if he got anything from him. He shows her a data pad and she reads the name Chezo. It's not familiar to her, but she wasn't on the station very long. He says he remembers. She says, we never talked about it. And he says, we never had to. She says, I would have been executed. You were innocent of the crime I was investigating. That wouldn't have mattered to the Cardassians, she says. Well, it mattered to me, Odo says. More hints of what's coming.
Yeah, and I think, again, showing Odo's personal code.
Yep. Then we go back into the past, as everything turns blue again, and we show two little kids standing behind the metal fence, staring sadly through it, waiting for their father to get off work, I guess.
Yeah.
And we get the contrast between the happy kids and these two sad, dirty faces. Living in 1800s.
Yeah, it was a nice little thematic touch there.
Yeah. It's the Charles Dickens play.
Oh, yeah. Now that, yes, that's full Charles Dickens right there.
We're back now to Kira sitting at a table eating. Odo joins her, saying, a pretty girl like you shouldn't be eating alone. Kira thinks he's coming on to her, which horrifies him. You misunderstand. Let me start over. He tells her Gul Dukat asked him to investigate the murder of a Bajoran man named Vatrick, and he thinks she knew him. Kira says she knew him, but there was no romance. He somehow managed to get Pyrellian ginger tea, and I happened to like ginger tea, and we became friends. Maybe he was attracted to me. It never went anywhere. She asks why Dukat would have Odo investigate and not one of his own security people. Odo thinks it's because no Bajoran would talk to them, but she points out that never stopped Cardassians from getting information before. Odo nods, then he asks where she was last night. She says she was at the bar trying to get a job. She lost her last job for hitting a supervisor for trying what she thought Odo was trying when he sat down. I appreciate your restraint this time, he says. Which is why there's no way she let that Ferengi jerk assault her twice in the previous episode. Ugh.
Yeah, that doesn't fit. None of that really fitted.
No. Anyway, he asks her not to leave the station or he'll have the Cardassians stop her. Then she says, unofficially or not, you're working for the Cardassians and sooner or later you're going to have to choose a side. He says he doesn't choose sides and she says everyone has to choose sides, Constable.
Ooh.
The music swells as he walks away. So I guess she coined the term Constable,
yeah.
Which is why he tolerates it from her, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yes, I did notice that.
Now we're back on Bajor in the present and Odo is talking to the widow again. She claims ignorance on the list.
Of course she does.
He also tells her that someone from Bajor asked Quark to retrieve it. I feel like he gives her an awful lot of info in this scene, including telling her that Quark isn't dead.
Yes, he really does.
Yeah, I could see him doing that in his first case, but this is the present.
I can just assume he was doing that deliberately.
Yeah, I thought that was a possibility anyway.
Especially telling her that Quark was still alive.
He asks if the name Chezo means anything to her, and she says no, of course. He then starts to leave, but he stops to say he understands that her power was recently terminated for lack of payment, yet she was able to transfer funds to the power company this morning, which I guess explains why she was sitting in the dark with Quark earlier.
Ah, it wasn't a fault with the power. She'd actually right. had her power turned off because
exactly.
she had no money.
She says she doesn't appreciate him looking into her private affairs. She got the money from a married friend and she doesn't want to drag him into anything, so she won't give his name. A likely story. As she says this, she takes his arm and escorts him back to the door. A very subtle get out.
That was.
When he leaves, her face just falls.
Oh, she does look worried. Definitely something going on here and yep. Odo the Bulldog is on the case.
Yep. We go back to the station, and Odo is now recording a supplemental security log saying, Quark is holding on to life like it's gold-pressed latinum. Maybe he doesn't want his brother to get the bar, or maybe he knows he's the only real witness I have.
No, I think Odo hit the nail on the head with, Quark doesn't want Rom to get the bar.
Yeah. Oh. Odo is in the infirmary looking at Quark lying there with his eyes open. Bashir says the next several hours will tell the story, and there's nothing else that can be done for him. He heads out just as Kira heads in. She glances at Quark and says she's got good news and bad news. She thinks she found Chezo. She hands him a little data pad with a picture of a dude on it named Chezaro. He's a Bajoran mining engineer. He used to come to the station often, but the bad news is he's dead. Drowned in a pond on his property just last night. Odo says he's probably responsible for that because he mentioned the name to the Vatrick woman.
I'm thinking that's why you shouldn't give too much information out to one of the possible suspects.
Right. He asks Kira to tell the Bajoran medical examiner he needs an autopsy on the dead guy, and he needs access to the Vatrick woman's communication records, and he's going to need access to central bank records. She leaves, and Odo tells the security guard that Quark is to be watched around the clock and have no visitors. Now we go back to the dark, foggy version of the station, and we get Quark's intro to Odo. Quark tries to give him a drink, but he's like, I don't drink anything.
I feel like you should read this part when they go back to the station with, like, a fake Dickensian English accent.
I don't think I can.
I think that would add some character to these flashback parts.
We should have had you do these scenes. Odo's outfit, by the way, is very cool in the flashbacks. It's dark and colorless, like most things in this flashback, but it has a high collar, which really suits him. I don't know, it just looks good.
Yeah, he had a little bit more fashion sense back then.
Maybe. Odo wants to check on the alibi of a red-haired Bajoran woman named Kira Nerys. Quark says, yeah, I remember her. How long was she here? Long enough, Quark says. Long enough for what? You know, Quark says. No, I don't, Odo says. She was showing me her initiative. Odo asks if that's some sort of sexual reference. Of course it is.
He's a Ferengi, of course it is.
God. Jobs are hard to come by, he says. And her credentials were, impressive. Odo reaches over the bar and grabs Quark by the lapels, pulling him up over the bar slowly. He protests, but Odo says, you're lying. I want the truth. Otherwise, I'll just turn you over to Dukat, and he can get it for me. Okay, fine. I didn't realize we were dealing with a murder here. She didn't pay me enough for that anyway. Odo puts him back down, realizing Kira paid Quark for an alibi.
So he's already got Quark figured out, and he's already strong-arming Quark when he needs to.
Smart.
Yeah, Odo's pretty much got the job of security investigator.
He wonders how Gul Dukat will react to that, just as Dukat approaches the bar. A broken alibi? Sounds like progress. Is there someone I can arrest? Not yet, Odo says. I need a name. You'll get a name when I'm certain it's the right name. Gul Dukat smiles and says, listen to the way he speaks to me, Quark. You're not afraid of anyone, are you, shapeshifter? Not even me. I was right about you. You are the man for the job. Then Quark tries to make friends with Odo by offering him chocolate or companionship, which Dukat finds very amusing, and I find gross.
I was fascinated by the fact that Odo didn't seem frightened by Dukat. I mean, he didn't even seem to have a great deal of respect for him either.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Odo was someone who tended towards respecting authority, but I guess that's not true, is it?
Mm-mm.
He has his own view of order, yeah. I guess.
Well, order and what's right and just.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's a fan of the Cardassian rules.
Yeah.
Then the laughing from that scene bleeds into some aliens laughing in the present. The camera pans past the table of laughing aliens to Sisko and Dax sitting at a table together.
That was a really nice cut.
Odo comes in and hands a pad to Sisko and says he's assembled his own version of the list, fusing the Vatrick woman's communication records. She's been talking to each of these people a lot. The odd thing is she never talked to any of them until 2 days ago. Also, interestingly, every one of them has transferred exactly 100,000 Bajoran liras into her bank account. Well, that's handy. Blackmail, Sisko says.
The big reveal.
Yes, but they wonder what kind of blackmail. It seems pretty suspicious they'd come out of the occupation with that kind of money. They were probably collaborators with the Cardassians selling out their own world for profit. Odo is like, not even a Ferengi would do that. I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I would disagree with that one. I'm pretty sure the Ferengi would sell out their mother for the right amount of money.
Yeah. He doesn't have enough to charge the Vatrick woman yet, but he wants to bring her to the station for questioning. Then he leaves, and we see the dude who shot Quark sitting at the bar sipping a blue drink and looking very ominous.
Looking very murdery, I wrote.
Yeah, he did look a little murdery. Why did we have this conversation right out in the open? Sometimes we do the weirdest things on the show. I mean, this should have been a private conversation, not one that they had in Quark's in front of everybody. So weird.
I have a list of collaborators right here.
God. Odo is standing on the second floor of the promenade looking down, and his log is playing like a voiceover again. adding to the film noir quality of this episode. He's saying, "Nobody ever had to teach me the justice trick. It's just something I've always known, a racial memory from my species, I guess. It's really the only clue I have to what kind of people they are." He says, "Are these kinds of thoughts appropriate for a Starfleet log?" I feel like the only reason he said that was to remind you that he was doing a log and not a voiceover. "I don't care. There's no room in justice for loyalty or friendship or love. Justice, like the humans like to say, is blind. I used to believe that, but I'm not so sure anymore."
"The city is a harsh mistress. Justice walks the streets in a cape."
Oh, Lord. We go back to the past with Kira admitting that she lied about her alibi. Then she tries to tell Odo she was sleeping during the murder, but he can see she's lying, and she's not good at it because her entire face changes. She says if she tells him the truth, he'll have to choose sides, calling him constable again.
Yep.
He keeps saying no, he was given this job because he's the outsider and he's only interested in justice. She says she didn't kill him because she was on the ore processing level when it happened. You can check the Cardassian security logs and you'll see a breach on level 21. She says she's in the Bajoran underground and she came here to commit acts of sabotage against the Cardassians. So Odo checks the console and sees that the ore processor was damaged by a subnucleonic device at 2500 hours last night.
Wow.
It'll be out of operation for 2 weeks. She says it will give the mine workers a little time off at least.
Wow, that was really trusting there. She basically just laid out exactly who and what she was to Odo. That's an enormous gamble.
Well, but if she doesn't do that and he turns her over to the Cardassians as the murderer, she's going to get executed. So at this point, it's a Hail Mary.
Oh, good point.
Odo realizes that's why she needed the alibi from Quark. "None of it will matter if you tell the Cardassians," Kira says. "I'll be executed for sabotage. Who cares about Bajorans killing Bajorans when you can execute a rebel?" Just as she says that, Dukat comes in. "Is this her?" Dukat asks. "No," Odo says, and tells Kira she can go. But Dukat grabs her arm on the way out the door and says, "If you're lying, shapeshifter." Odo says, "If you know as much about me as you say you do, you know I don't lie. And I'm convinced she did not kill Vatrick." Dukat releases her and she leaves, without ever looking Dukat in the eye.
Wow. He put his neck out for Kira.
Yep.
That was impressive.
But he doesn't think she killed Vatrick.
Yeah, but he knows she's a Bajoran freedom fighter.
Oh, right. Yep. We go back to the present and Odo is in his office looking sad. Something is troubling him, but we don't know what it is yet. In the infirmary, the guy who shot Quark comes in with flowers, asking if it's too late for visitors. The security guy says no visitors permitted, but because we have the worst security guards and the worst security, and the guy just pushes the flowers into the security guard with a hidden knife in them and stabs him in the chest.
They so need to work on their security.
Oh my goodness. Then he goes over to Quark and he turns off the machine over him and he holds a pillow over Quark's face just as Rum enters and sees what's happening and starts screeching at the top of his lungs.
Yes.
The guy grabs Rum and throws him across the room before trying to escape, but Odo grabs him and pushes him up against the wall, calling for Bashir. He tells Rom to stop screaming, saying he's a hero and he saved his brother's life. First, Rom smiles, then he starts screaming again.
What about the poor security guard?
Yeah, no, well, he called Bashir.
There's a guy lying on the floor, stabbed, probably bleeding to death.
Oh my gosh. We show a close-up of Quark's face, whose eyes are still wide open, which is so weird, and Quark smiles. So, obviously, he's going to survive. Now the bad dude is in a security cell, and Mrs. Vatrick is looking at him, saying she's never seen him before in her life. Odo points out that her communication records indicate she called him and he called her several times. Kira says, "And you also transferred a large sum of money into his account 2 days ago."
So they don't have burner cell phones in the future.
Apparently not.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think we're all still on landlines. "I want to confer with my advocate," she says, having been caught. She's wearing quite a regal outfit in this scene.
A green
and silver dress with an elaborate crown-like headpiece.
She clearly has very expensive tastes.
Yeah. It's very fancy. Odo agrees she can talk to her advocate, but she'll have to wait in a cell, and he opens it up for her. On her way in, she says, "I don't care what you think you know, shapeshifter. You'll never be able to prove that I killed my husband, because I didn't." "I know," Odo says, as he locks her in the cell. And Kira gets a funny look on her face and follows him out of the cell area into his office. When they're alone, she asks when he figured it out. He says, "When you found the Chizaro guy so quickly. Your friends from the underground must have already suspected him of being a collaborator. Once I knew the list of 8 names were collaborators, the murder of Vatrick made sense for the first time. He must have been a collaborator too. He had the money for ginger tea. He had the private quarters. I never had a motive for this murder until now. He kept his wife in relative luxury. She surely wouldn't have killed him." That's a little flimsy, but I'll allow it.
We'll let that one pass.
Yeah. So who would kill a Cardassian collaborator? And he turns his head toward Kira. Someone in the Bajoran underground, of course. She says a colleague of hers was given the job of sabotaging the ore processor, and Vatrick was her responsibility. She wasn't there to kill him, though. She was there to find the list. We knew that Vatrick was their direct link to Dukat. Odo realizes that's why Dukat chose him to investigate. He didn't want to endanger his network of Bajoran sympathizers. Kira says that, obviously, she didn't find the list, and Vatrick walked in, and she didn't have a choice. I misjudged you, Major, Odo says. You're a better liar than I gave you credit for.
I would say that's a real compliment from Odo.
Yeah.
Clearly, she absolutely got the better of him.
Yep. Then he says she had a lot of time to admit the truth, and she says she tried to tell him 100 times but was afraid. What you think of me matters a lot. Then Odo asks if she was worried it might affect their friendship, and she nods. Maybe it doesn't have to, Odo says. She smiles and asks if he'll ever be able to trust her in the same way again. Odo stands up straight, and I noticed at that point that his neck is nearly as long as Dukat's. But he doesn't answer, and the episode just ends. It was a peculiar ending.
Yes, that was a very leave-it-hanging kind of ending. Deliberately done.
Yes, deliberately done. Okay, well, over-analysis, what have you got?
I have to admit, I do like the Odo Law and Order episodes.
Murder, he wrote.
Firstly, I would have thought there would have been a lot of hunting for collaborators already by the Bajorans, given that, you know, they've had a year now since the occupation ended. You'd be looking for people who had a lot of money or lived very comfortable lives under the Cardassians. So
yeah.
I would have thought there would have been quite a lot of revenge killings. Maybe that's part of the actual problems that are happening on Bajor that we know we've been seeing, is that there is reprisals against collaborators or alleged collaborators. Also, do you think Kira passed on the name of Chezo to former resistance members and she was the one who got him killed?
Yep.
Not necessarily her doing it, but somebody within the organization.
Oh, definitely. Vatrick had no reason to kill this person.
Yeah.
This was a cash cow for her.
Okay. I wasn't sure about that. I lean towards it being something Kira caused to happen.
I mean, maybe she didn't really... Oh, gosh, I don't know. Because why would she even tell Odo the name?
Yeah.
Because she didn't have to.
That's a good point.
But she's not stupid, so she had to know that if she contacted her friends...
Yeah.
That dude was not going to live. I don't know. It's a good question.
Or maybe she passed the name on to the appropriate authorities who are investigating collaborators, and somebody else got to him first.
Maybe. That's a generous view.
I'm often generous with these.
You are.
The second one is, how can Odo have a problem with any of this? She was a freedom fighter in an occupation, fighting a war against the Cardassians, and she kills somebody who's working with the Cardassians. It's part of the conflict. What does trust have to do with it?
He seemed more upset that she hadn't come clean.
Ah, okay.
At least that was my take.
Yeah. That's interesting, because I saw it as... I thought it was slightly more petty. I saw him kind of annoyed that she'd pulled the wool over his eyes. And what would he have done? She would have had... Maybe she admitted, oh yeah, I killed him. And then Dukat would have just had her executed.
Well, perhaps the slightly ambiguous ending was to allow you to make up your own mind.
Ooh.
About how you saw it.
Yeah.
It's a nice writing trick.
Yes. Yes.
Because if he was really upset, he would have, I don't know. I guess he was a Bajoran.
Yes.
So, yeah, he would have turned her into the Bajoran authorities. Yeah.
But he was also a Cardassian collaborator and was providing information to the Cardassians. So the Cardassians might have taken a bigger interest.
I mean, Odo's got this whole thing about justice and what's right, and it's not so much about what the rules are that someone else is setting.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any love lost between him and the Cardassians.
Right.
It seems like he was more focused on justice, and he says something to that effect in one of those ridiculous voiceovers. So from his point of view, he was looking at the collaborators as being pretty awful, because he said that, right? Even the Ferengi wouldn't do that.
Right.
That's quite a slam. So yeah, in his mind, I guess he didn't seem too upset about it.
That's true.
He just seemed more upset that Kira didn't tell him.
That I think that's a good way of looking at that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that pretty much wraps it up for me. It's a very open and closed episode. Just a few little questions around the edges.
Yeah. I just have two questions for overanalysis.
Okay.
Why is there a list of names on a piece of paper?
Because that's what you do when you have a list of collaborators, people you work with. You write it down on a piece of paper and you put it in the wall safe.
Was someone trying to hold on to it for insurance, or was their intent to sell it? It just seemed weird that it was on paper.
I meant to actually look up this episode because I was wondering if this was based on like a post-war movie. I feel like this was based on something else.
It could be. It also seemed surprising to me that Gul Dukat kept Odo on as the security person when he didn't solve his very first crime.
Well, I think the rationale for that was talked about in the episode. He was independent, so he could get the Bajorans to talk more easily.
Well, that was what Odo thought. But it turned out that the reason he brought Odo in was so that the Cardassians didn't find out that he had collaborators.
Right.
Although, why would the Cardassians care? Maybe because he was doing it secretly.
Yes. Probably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then it's even stranger.
It would very much fit with Dukat and how he works behind the scenes and does a lot of underhanded things that even the Cardassians don't know about.
Well, yeah, I think we've seen that already with him. But also, I guess, if he did bring Odo in only because he had a vested interest, then it still makes me ask why he kept him on. I guess he saw something in Odo that he liked.
Well, Odo did seem very quick on the uptake on how to actually do the job and the things to look at. Dukat has clearly did his homework about Odo before this point. So he knows how effective Odo is. And I think that's if you like, the subtext.
He also maybe thought he would eventually get to Odo and turn him and be able to use him more as a tool.
Also a good point. Odo likes order, so it might be a valid extrapolation that eventually you could show how the Cardassian Empire and its order is beneficial.
Yeah, sure.
That's a good take.
Okay, well, let's move on to women in the future. And I got nothing. I like a woman bad guy, although the Vatric woman wasn't really a bad guy, but she wasn't a stereotype either. And, you know, I think back to the episode of Dax with the widow and how her reputation was something that, you know, she couldn't let get sullied. And it was just such an old-fashioned view.
Right.
And it was really obnoxious. And this wasn't like that at all. She was trying to get the names. She knew that her husband was a collaborator. Maybe she was also a collaborator. I don't know. But she was trying to get the names in order to blackmail people to get money so she could keep her power on and keep herself in the luxury that she was enjoying.
She just enjoyed the money.
Yeah, she was a good bad guy. Honestly, there wasn't a lot to talk about in terms of women in the future.
I think you saw how fearless Kira was.
Yeah, she was pretty good. I think this paints a picture of Kira that we knew was there, but hadn't had an opportunity to see. So I sort of like that. We get to see her and how she reacted in a desperate situation, which was she was quick to lie and quick to protect herself.
And she was also effective in the lying.
She was effective in the lying, and she was effective in her mission because they got put on that station, which seems like a very dangerous place,
right,
and managed to carry out their mission, except they didn't get the list, but they still managed to sabotage the plant.
Yeah, so it showed her efficiency as a member of the Resistance.
Yep. But once again, Dax is little more than window dressing with nothing to do.
She was somebody for Sisko to have a drink with.
Well, Sisko had nothing to do either in this episode. This was a quirky episode.
He did play the good cop.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. He did. But no, I don't really have anything for women in the future. So I'm going to move right into rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral? What is your rating?
Well, you know how I do like a Odo Law and Order episode.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a thumbs up because even though it's kind of a light episode, I would say, it's still very good. I did find it very enjoyable.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I give it a thumbs up. I thought it was a real positive move after the last crappy episode. I mean, it was a little bit silly and you could see what they were doing. It had that sort of film noir thing and it was like you were reading a dime store novel. But I kind of liked that. It was cool. They did a little different thing. And at the same time, they introduced us to a lot of things from the past that we didn't know about. And yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it gave you a good setup for Odo, where he sort of more on his background, where he came from and what his thought processes were.
Yeah.
And I think it also, maybe this has been the first episode that really has showed Odo as a skilled investigator.
Yeah, although I still don't think he should have told the Vatric woman all those things.
Yeah, that did seem a bit odd.
But he eventually solved the crime that he was trying to solve after 5 years. Yeah.
Oh, she could have found out Quark was alive, I guess.
He could have done it to draw out the murderer, and it worked.
That's what I was trying to say, yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give it to him. Okay, that's it?
I think that's it.
Well, all right, that wraps it up for Season 2, Episode 8. Come back next week for Episode 9. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.